With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Before we jump in, I want to tell you about New York Times Audio, a new iOS app for New York Times news subscribers. It's got the Athletic NBA show, plus all the other great podcasts from The Athletic, exclusive shows, narrative articles, and more. New York Times Audio, download it now at nytimes.com/audio app.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA show,
Monday through
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
From the Golden Gate to the New York Bay.
What I have access to is a bit different than the public.
Tamper with you.
Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Kane,
Anthony Slater, and Fred Katz.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
not talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I didn't tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Here's your host, Sam
Amick. Hello and welcome to a late playoffs edition of the Tampering Podcast. Fred Katz is with me, I believe, from New York. I'm just guessing. And Sam Amick is with us, Fred, from an Uber. I assume he's going, wow, LAX, Burbank, if he's smart. But he just left a, I don't want to say a dud of a conference finals, but a non-competitive conference finals in a lot of ways. Nuggets sweep. Sam Amick, you're on the ground. What is going down there?
Well, first of all, Slater, I'm not going to let you get away with that slander. You said if you're smart, you go out of Burbank as I head to LAX, which makes me not smart, clearly. Man.
I mean, you revealed it yourself. I mean.
And you're also, I mean, why is it got to be Uber? Why can't it be Lyft? Let's give both companies a little bit of free advertising. It is an Uber. I'm here. I'm going to the airport. I mean, you know, it's funny. It's a sweep. And it, yes, by definition, is a dud of a conference finals. But man, they went out in style when it comes to the compelling, you know, nature of post game four. The Nuggets spend the entire series with good reason expressing their frustration with how some of the media focus on the Lakers more than they do what the Nuggets have accomplished. And then lo and behold, we have the one and only LeBron James hinting at his retirement postgame, which naturally means that the Nuggets don't get the headlines like they would have otherwise. So crazy night at the arena. You know, I obviously wrote about it. It's LeBron, you know what I mean? We're going to have 8 days to kind of aggrandize the Nuggets and what they've accomplished, but it was not expected to see him go down that road.
You believe this, Sam, Fred? You believe this? He goes right to LeBron?
I do. And every time Michael Malone spent his post-game press conference basically doing a Rodney Dangerfield impression.
Right.
Every single time that he did that, you know what I just thought about? I thought about, my goodness, he would have fined Sam more than I would this season. He would have just I'm just imagining him on this podcast when you bring up Russell Westbrook's fit with LeBron in the middle of December and him just being like, Sam, we're not having this. There are 29 other teams. I'm just imagining it.
You mean we're not gonna spend the next 30 minutes talking about the future of D'Angelo Russell with the Lakers? That's not what we're doing today.
I mean, I'm slightly interested.
guys, we're encroaching on a new type of doing media here. There were supposedly two approaches we could have had for this podcast. We could have been typical, you know, typical old school media that's just going to talk about the big market team with the most famous, biggest name in the league. And we could have just talked about that, or we could have talked about the Nuggets and their success story and all that. And instead, we're ironically talking about how we're not going to talk about the Lakers. That is,
I thought you were going to say,
that is a heck of an intro.
I thought you were going to say, we're pivoting to the Wizards GM search. I thought you were going to try to throw that in block one.
I should have said that. So let's discuss how John Thompson III is involved in all of this in their front office.
Hey, right? Come on. Get it back on track, Frank. Let's go.
All right. From the scene.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, obviously it sounds like you were in the LeBron press conference last night. You are also, I'm sure, around the Nuggets just celebration. I don't know, where would you rather talk LeBron first? I know you wrote your column on LeBron.
No, I'll do both. I mean, here's the funny part. As you know, we just spent the last few weeks together covering the playoffs. I will float a lot of times between both teams and try to figure out what I can get into, who I can talk to. And I was trying to be two places at once. So I went to the first half of LeBron's press conference and I heard some very, very mild hinting, not at retirement, but just at reflection. And he was real reluctant to really reflect at all on this season. And I didn't make too much of it. So I headed in the Nuggets direction. So I did end up having to play catch up on the LeBron side of things. Quickly started hearing that something of note had happened over there. But in the interest of giving the Nuggets their just due, it was fun to watch them celebrate. This is a franchise that has never been to the NBA Finals. 1976, they get there when they were in the ABA. I looked at it last night. You know, their playoff path of that ABA Nuggets team was the Kentucky Colonels and the New York Nets is who they got through. In that postseason run. So a very long time ago.
That's a gauntlet.
Yeah, that's a gauntlet. It was a year before I was born. So they were ecstatic. And just to give you a little color, this cracked me up. You had a lot of front office people, scouts, that everybody was upset. Not obsessed, but everybody was on their phones. And I've actually never seen something like this. Of course, phones are part of what we do these days. But the flood of text messages that was coming all of their way, it was like the universal takeaway. And it was pretty funny to watch. One guy, I don't want to put his name out there, but he's going through and he's got 100+ text messages. And he says, man, I'm only going to respond to my wife and then everybody else I'll get back to later. And he's scrolling through all of them. And he was like, hey, my wife didn't even text me. Everybody else did. And, you know, even Nikola Jokic, he sat in the locker room after having a masterful series. I voted for him as everybody else did for Finals MVP or West Finals MVP. He's in the corner, you know, ice in his feet, on his phone. He was FaceTiming with somebody, I assume family. It was a lot of Serbian being spoken. And just soaking it up. And guys, we're having a good time. You know, I'm sure, again, like you said, we fell into the trap of, I'm sure they love that we're talking Lakers the day after, and I'm sure they're rolling their eyes at what LeBron had to say afterwards. But I don't think it was going to get in the way of their fulfillment. They seem like a pretty happy group.
If they get Miami in the finals, like, both teams are going to be complaining about lack of coverage, we're going to have to cover somebody.
Certainly going to be complaining about lack of coverage from The Athletic. I'll tell you that much.
Okay.
Hey, man. All right. Fred, 1,600 words on Nikola Jokic after game one, 1,800 words on the Nuggets after game three.
I know. I'm just making a joke about how we don't have beat writers on either teams that will likely get me fired. That's all. That's all it is.
Fred's out there today.
Yeah, I am. That's true. I have a question for you guys. Grander stuff, because we're going to have another podcast next week. I don't feel as rushed to talk about the finals and previewing that kind of stuff. We have another podcast next week and we'll definitely be doing that then. But I'm curious to know, we talked so much, not just us, everybody, during the regular season about Embiid versus Jokic. It was such a hot topic. And this is, somewhat feeling a little bit like the 95 MVP. Remember the 95 MVP? David Robinson wins MVP, and he plays Hakeem in the playoffs, and it's announced right before, and Hakeem just blows him out of the water and takes the Rockets to the finals, and the Rockets end up winning their second title in as many years. And it's kind of remember it as like David Robinson won MVP, but Hakeem had the last laugh. Does this feel like a same sort of thing in terms of what Jokic has done this postseason? Because it's not just that this team is going to the finals. It's not just that they swept in the conference finals. Jokic is having one of the greatest postseasons in the history of the league. I mean, it is insanity what he is doing. Just 30, 10, and 10 every single night. He played every minute of the second half in yesterday's game. And yeah, there were some moments where he looked a little bit sloppy, but like, my goodness, he hit that absolutely insane over the head fall away shot that he joked is now his signature shot.
I thought that was a long two in the moment, like clearly, right? You know, and then you watch the replay, you're like, geez, he did kind of like somehow get that foot behind the line and get it.
Yeah.
It was like a wide out in football, just finding the line. It was art. It was incredible.
Yeah, he had a few unbelievable passes. He was Jokic the whole way through. And to come up with this kind of postseason performance, I mean, this is not just like a can Jokic win in the playoffs thing. And this is not like a Dirk 2011 thing. This is a holy crap, we're witnessing one of the greatest postseasons ever, period. No qualifier.
It reminds me of the Giannis MVP, or non-MVP, I should say, from a few years ago, right? Giannis had the two straight, but then the failures in the playoffs, and then the story going in was like, can he really get three straight when he hasn't performed in the playoffs like he needed to? Didn't get the MVP, remember that third straight year, and then rattled off, won the title. What did he finish with, like 50 and 12 or something in the game six to close it out. So that to me feels a little bit more like it. I personally am not like super regretful. I voted Embiid. Like I'm not like, I don't know how you feel, Sam. I'm not like agonizing
I voted for Giannis. But I mean, Fred, your point definitely lands. It's more so just about stopping any and all conversation about what Jokic does somehow not being substantive, somehow not being real. And I'll be honest, this I'll get on my little kind of cranky media podium for a minute. Some of these press conferences between the Nuggets and the assembled media, I feel like telling the Nuggets, why don't you just go into the therapy room with ESPN and work out your issues with them? Because a lot, like there are very specific talking points that Michael Malone continues to highlight, that, and it's fine. ESPN's got their opinions and just like we do, everybody does, but they are only reacting, it seems, to a lot of the voices, from that side of the media spectrum. And last night, more specifically, and it was entertaining, but Michael Malone just went right at, Kendrick Perkins was largely the one, who had talked about the MVP race, being something where Jokic was stat padding. And he kind of characterized, Malone did, the conversation as being, so negative that he actually thought that it bothered Jokic, that the negativity bothered Jokic. And Jokic later went on to talk about how, he actually defended Embiid, and he talked about how he thought it was mean, I think was the word he used, to have people now questioning the MVP race. He was very classy about it and said that Embiid was a worthy MVP. For me, though, to your question, Fred, the takeaway is just, I mean, Slater, even you and I have talked about Jokic in the playoffs last year against the Warriors. They game planned against him. I know the Nuggets were down, no Jamal Murray, no Michael Porter Jr., but the Warriors left that series, not necessarily being believers in all things Jokic. And, we had not seen, other than the bubble and the West Finals when they were still on the come up, what he would look like with, this kind of a roster, and he's been incredible. And I think, all of the doubting, all the kind of skepticism has got to go away.
Yeah, I remember the Warriors post-series, I think, were very complimentary of the task he is to contain offensively. I remember Draymond went on like a long thing about the respect he gained, just like guarding him one-on-one, but also everything else you have to shut down because of him. But I do remember – you know, they dragged him into 100 high screens every game. You know, they just were making him play in space. And then to me, that's maybe the question mark that still remained entering these playoffs, right? At the highest level, could he survive defensively in a right targeted scheme against the wrong opponent? And I think he's been adequate defensively. It's not like he's, you know, shined defensively, but like, has there been a point in these playoffs where you're like, oh man, like, can he play right now? You know, it's like, you know, that they're really going at him. I mean, I think the Lakers at times tried in this series, but it's not like it was just a gold mine when they were going after him.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but AD struggled far more than I think most would have thought going in, even in one-on-one settings. You know, I thought he was very good defensively. And again, the production is historic. You know, got to give Jamal Murray his flowers too, because I actually thought it was a fairly close MVP vote, which sounds just insane when you're talking about Jokic finishing this series with, I think, 27, you know, 14 and 11 or whatever it was. But, you know, Jamal Murray averaging 35 roughly for the series was incredible. And the timing of some of his performances, whether it was a great start that they needed in a first quarter or a great finish with, you know, a 23-point fourth quarter. So they look good. And like you said, Fred, we'll talk about the finals plenty down the road, but the Nuggets, this team that, you know, had not really been taken seriously for the past couple of years is getting it done.
Yeah. They also part of Jokic looking totally solid on defense is I really think what we're seeing from Denver defensively right now is the concept we talk about all the time, which is continuity. Like, just look at that final play of the game last night when LeBron goes left to the basket with Aaron Gordon on him, and Jamal Murray reads it perfectly, comes over and just gets his hands on the ball when LeBron is going up, right? To me, that's just like, I know where Aaron Gordon's going. I know how he's going to defend this. I know how much time is left on the clock, and I'm scurrying over to double right now because LeBron has no more time to pass. There were a lot of moments like that for Denver defensively during this series. First of all, I thought Gordon was awesome during the series. He's such a good fit for them. He's so good defensively. I thought he had a really wonderful series. Even in those moments where offensively he like wasn't there, he wasn't shooting the ball, he was being helped off of and hurting their spacing and all that, I just thought defensively he was so important for them. And I think they are really, really good communicating. They're really good in knowing where each other are at every given moment. And Jokic is a big part of that too, where he's good at that kind of stuff. And like, they'll send him far from the rim, and he's quicker footed than he really looks. And I think defensively they really understand their identities. And it really shows in those kinds of moments where like the Lakers probably have more defensive individual talent. Bruce Brown's been huge for them too, but the Lakers probably have more defensive individual talent. They have a lot of individual defensive talent, but that team was just put together. So they have moments where it's like, it's a little tougher. There's a lot of stuff they're trying for the first time, you know?
Yeah, they're reliably deeper than other teams in the West. And honestly, I mean, they are a very worthy West winner. But also, I think we can look back at the West playoffs in retrospect and be like, man, like weaker than it has been previously, right? Memphis as the 2 seed just kind of crumbled. Kings is the 3 seed, great season, but, you know, faltered against the Warriors in the first round, and a Warriors team who revealed itself to be pretty flawed. You know, the Lakers, that Suns-Clippers series, you look back in that first round series, like, you know, the Clippers fell apart physically. The Suns just weren't, like, talk about a lack of depth versus reliable depth. I think that showed in the second round. So the path, I think, kind of opened up for the Nuggets and may open up beyond this season in the West for the Nuggets. If you really think about, you know, their largest competitors, potentially the Lakers getting old and potentially their best player retiring, although I know Sam has a column on that, very skeptical of it, which I would agree with. But, you know, I it'll be interesting if they're playing the Heat. I assume they're going to be heavy favorites, but it's funny because the Heat have been heavy underdogs in like every series and won. So, Sam,
let's go down at the risk of me, you know, getting fined in the swear jar, my friend, because we, you know, again, we're going to have plenty of time to talk finals. I would love to get your guys' thoughts on LeBron and all things Lakers, because it's a pretty interesting landscape. You know, what I essentially tried to write was that, first of all, from a reporting standpoint, you know, people close to LeBron in the immediate aftermath of not only his comments, but, you know, Chris Haynes from Bleacher Report had a source piece indicating that LeBron was legitimately thinking about retirement. And then David Menemen from ESPN had an on-record quote from LeBron saying the same thing. So LeBron has clearly chosen for this message to be out there. The people close to him were skeptical that it would actually happen. Felt like you have the raw emotion of a disappointing finish, getting swept for the third time in his career. Excuse me. First time not in the finals. You have another kind of working theory that I did find interesting from a human standpoint, I could see, is that Carmelo Anthony retired yesterday officially. And LeBron, as he shared in his press conference, was actually part of the announcement, where it sounds like, you know, with his production company and all that comes with his media wing, that he had actually shot Melo's video.
The way he said it, I was like envisioning LeBron literally like behind the camera, like, yeah, Melo. Oh, yeah. A little bit to the right, Melo.
I actually wrote it. I wrote it in my column in intentionally vague, because I didn't have the answer. I don't think he had the camera in his hand, but I had the same.
No, he was just holding the boom mic. That was all of us. He misled a little bit.
Take four, Melo.
Well, he's so tall and his arms are so long that he's an elite boom mic holder.
Hey, listen, the boom mic guys, they're usually pretty ripped because it's hard to hold that thing. But LeBron, you know, he's a beast, so I'm sure he'd have no problem. But I the idea that you see your friend Carmelo Anthony retire. And by the way, you know, you just got beat by a Nuggets team. And this is something maybe down the road to talk about or write about. A Nuggets team led by a guy, Nikola Jokic, who wears the same number 15 that Melo wore back in the day. That'll make jersey retirement tricky at some point here. I think I know
who's getting the 15 in the rafters.
Yeah. But it's going to make you reflective. You know what I mean? I meant to look it up last night. In fact, if you guys wouldn't mind cheating and looking on the internet, tell me what draft class Calvin Booth was real quick. If you could
throw to the Katz Google. He's on it.
Okay.
I'm on
it. The idea was that, you know, that Melo's retirement essentially got LeBron at his feels a bit. And I could see that being part of it. Now, the other side of it, I guess, is that LeBron's very calculated. He's always been calculated. And so it did immediately make people wonder what his motive might have been when it comes to the Lakers and their business. So we now know this, you know, this was in my column. The Lakers messaging recently has been that they are not letting Austin Reeves or Rui Hachimura get away. They're both restricted free agents. They have a cap on what they can offer Austin, but then once he hits the open market, which I anticipate he will, they have the ability to match whatever comes his way. With Rui, they can match. And they have, you know, identified those two guys as absolute priorities. D'Angelo Russell's negotiations are going to be, I think, more complicated. We'll see where that goes. But it did feel like, you know, in this game where Kyrie Irving is sitting in one corner, and even, you know, and there's no reason to think that these dots are worth connecting, but just for the sake of context, Trae Young was at the game as well. You see these star players, and it's the Lakers, which they traffic in star players. That's what they do. And so that formula, the Anthony Davis to L.A., Russell Westbrook to L.A. formula, is always going to be part of the playbook. And it makes you wonder, you know, is LeBron 100% behind this idea of tying up all of their cap room? Well, you know, and getting things done with guys like Austin and Rui, because if you go that route, you cannot do Kyrie. So only he knows. It's that time for speculation, but those were some of the kind of the takeaways coming out of the room last night.
Calvin Booth was drafted in 1999.
All right, so 4 years. You know, Calvin, of course, is the head of the Nuggets front office, their GM. He's been in the front office since 2017. You know, and this is a guy that came into the league 4 years before LeBron. I mean, it's this man's been doing it a long, long, long time, and he's still obviously elite.
So,
well, you want to hear something incredible? I look, I don't think LeBron's retiring. He's been talking for years about how he wants to play with his son. Like, I don't think that means that his son can't even be in the league for another 2 years. I mean, that means he's been thinking far and ahead. And look, LeBron is still incredible. Like,
it's another year, though, right? Am I wrong?
It's another year, but then he has to. It's another 2 years because he's got to play next year, and then he'd have to play the following year with his son if his son even comes out, and his son would have to come out after his freshman year too. So,
but real quickly, and I'm apologies for jumping in. Like, I hear you, Fred, but you know, I did kind of feel that idea. Like, he was he's an old dude in the league now, and it was a tough year. They go 2-10 to start the year. They deal with the Westbrook stuff for months. The longer Westbrook has been gone from the Lakers, the more crystallized the narrative has become within their circles that it was exhausting to deal with that component. I have joked with Darvin Ham that it felt like they had four seasons this year. So do I think he's going to retire?
You didn't probably even mention the physical nature of the season, which included a pretty bad foot injury that apparently there was at least suggestions of surgery. So that too. And he just physically, like, the game wears on him much more than he used to.
You know who would never retire right now? The LeBron James of feet would never retire right now. He'd give it a go.
47 minutes. I mean, 40. We got to say 47 minutes and 56 seconds at 38 years old. You know, there was two plays that I'm going to remember from this night if we're wrong and if he does retire. He, with about, I think it was 4 minutes left in the third, something like that. He exploits that annoying little trend where if you let the ball roll in on an inbounds pass, the shot clock doesn't start, the game clock doesn't start. And they let LeBron have his ball as it's rolling down the floor. The Nuggets did not encroach and force him to pick it up. And I timed it. He literally earned himself 15 seconds of rest in real time. And it seemed very real. Like, I'm exhausted. I need 15 seconds. There was another play where he ran to the right corner and just hands on his knees was getting himself a blow on the offensive end. The ball got swung to him. He found Rui Hachimura on the wing for a three. Rui missed it. And it was one of the many times last night where I found myself going, man, the thought bubble above LeBron at times has got to be like, I swear to God, AD, can you hit the bunny? Rui, can you hit the three? Like, I'm giving you everything here. And his teammates, you know, didn't really meet that level of competition. So if this is how he goes out, it was a pretty memorable performance.
I am skeptical he will retire because he's so good, because what we're talking about, he remains just so good. But also, I to me, the way I read it from the outside is two reasons. Number one, he becomes a headline. He likes to be a headline. Like, we all know that. Like, he is a major headline today. But also, too, especially the way he was like, I'll consider it, you know. I just think he's leaving the door open for an ability to use leverage if he needs it this summer, right? If he does not like the plan, this is one way to kind of keep his power play buttons open for him to push.
Very, very Astros Roger Clemens. Remember when Clemens kept saying, I think I'm going to retire, and then he kept coming out of retirement every year, like in the middle of the year?
Kind of what Aaron Rodgers has been doing in a lot of ways, right? The last couple of years. I mean, a lot of these.
I mean, look, one thing that I will say is we all have to be careful, because Melo retired, and then LeBron floated retirement hours later. And even in the post-game presser, people are talking about LeBron being the final guy from his draft class, as Udonis Haslem sits on the other side waiting to go to his 900th finals at age 603. Udonis Haslem, who can talk to us about surviving the Black Plague, is going to go to the finals once again. He's still there. He's in the league. He was the class of 2003.
By the way, LeBron teammate Udonis Haslem back in the days.
Yes, everyone teammate. He was teammates with the Heat. He was teammates before there was Heat. He was teammates with, like, the Sun. That's how far back he goes.
He's literally the Heat. I'm envisioning Udonis now as a Lord of the Rings character, 603 years old, Gandalf style, long beard, you shall not pass.
I mean, that's what he is. That's exactly what he is. And so, you know, he was class of 2003. What a career. But anyway, that's another thing. It's like,
so the finals is still there. It's all about the LeBron shade. Is that, you know, like, what about Udonis?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Michael Malone can be screaming about how we're still talking about LeBron, even though they got eliminated 10 days ago, and the Heat can be screaming, what about Udonis? That's how it can go. He's so old that Udonis is actually named after him. That's how old he is.
Slater, we got Slater, the Cats, the comedy the hour here. parting thoughts on the series in general, Sam, as you depart?
Thoughts on the series in general. I mean, you guys hit on it. The Nuggets depth is real and their chemistry is real. Aaron Gordon is absolutely the unsung hero of their group. And to his credit, man, he's really, his messaging and his way he's moving, he's really selfless, seems really committed to the cause. I always think about Aaron Slater in the context of Draymond last year. I feel like when Aaron is old and gray, like Udonis Haslem, he might actually, he'd probably never admit it, but he might quietly or privately admit that, you know, I think Draymond challenging him last year was the type of thing that inspired him in the summer to change the way he competes, or at least to get deeper with his program.
For Sam, just for people's context, Draymond during that first round series that the Warriors won 4-1 was very, like, just talk trash to Aaron Gordon the entire time. But, you know, a lot of times Draymond will target someone he believes he can take mentally out of a series in a lot of ways. And Draymond was pretty ruthless and relentless. And that's what you're discussing.
And if talking you about remember, Aaron. Gordon, after that series, was really tough on himself publicly. Like, in the press conference, talking about, I've just got to find a way to work harder, you know, and to take it deeper. And he's been really good, and he doesn't get any shine. Like, if the Nuggets complain about media coverage, you know, nobody talks about Aaron Gordon. We are here, but not much. It's Jokic, it's Murray, it's KCP, it's Bruce Brown. You know, Aaron Gordon's been a fantastic pickup. And I also think, since we're in the giving flowers business this time of year, Tim Conley deserves love here. You have such a unique situation where an executive makes a choice to leave an organization. But Tim, you know, now heading up the T-Wolves front office, of course, there's part of you, these are first world problems, but there's part of me that feels for him a little bit when it comes to, you make a career choice. Obviously, he's getting paid very well. His family's taken care of. But it's been a tough year in Minnesota. And after building this Nuggets group, drafting Jokic, drafting Murray, drafting Michael Porter Jr., you know, and trading for Aaron Gordon, you see them get to the finals, you know, for the first time in franchise history. Now, you know, from there, Calvin Booth, who worked under Tim for several years prior, just fantastic moves around the margins, you know, some of the guys that we mentioned. So they're deep, and they do defend, and they have a historic offense. And Jokic is clearly capable of doing this on the biggest stages. And Jamal Murray, by the way, post ACL tear, is ready to retire the Bubble Jamal nickname, because, you know, this just looks like Jamal Murray, and he was dominant. So they're going to be formidable. And if it is the Heat, obviously, you got all things Jimmy Buckets, who, as we speak in real time, just got a notification that he apparently needs to talk to the media a little more often. He got fined $25,000 for skipping media after game 3, but on the court, he's doing his job, and that'll be presumably a fun series.
Yeah, I mean, I remember how much Tim Connolly gave his stamp of approval to Calvin Booth, and who I know those two are really close, and it's really interesting to see how Booth has kind of carried out the same sort of vision. And you look at the two most significant moves he made last summer, and they were both A-pluses, right? Like, signing Bruce Brown to a 2-year, like, basically for the taxpayer mid-level exception, which is a fantastic value contract. He's been so important for them. He's been so important for them defensively, as a ball mover, as a cutter, as a screener, doing basically the same stuff that he did in Brooklyn, but for them. And he's been a great fit next to Jokic, even if he's not necessarily like a threatening shooter. And then the KCP trade, which was just ginormous for them. That's the exact kind of guy who they've needed for a while. That sort of like guard slash wing who's able to be physical on the perimeter, can shoot threes. He plays off of Jokic beautifully. He was the third best player on a title team. When the Lakers went on that title run in the bubble, like he was their third best player. And getting him for Monte Morris, which is a nice, you know, he's a really nice player, and he had a solid year for Washington, but basically making the decision of like, you know what? We have Nikola Jokic. We can win without playing a conventional backup point guard. Like they're winning without playing a conventional backup point guard. And they won game four without playing a conventional backup center because Jokic just played the whole damn time. Like it's them having that sort of recognition and realizing that, is really interesting. KCP has just been absolutely massive for them. Two phenomenal moves by that front office.
Guys, I'm about to transition into the airport action, but I think this, I'm stealing this material from ESPN's Tim McMahon. Hopefully he already used it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Oh, yeah, that's on the ground right
there. Oh, yeah, that is on the ground. Sam, even when you're podcasting, you still have manners. What a guy.
You know what his material was? You know what KCP stands for? Is keep your championship players.
Yes.
And with that, Sam, Amy,
with that,
is departing. Yeah. Sam, yeah.
Appreciate y'all. I will be seeing you soon. And good luck carrying the rest of the pod. 30 minutes of Wizards GM search.
At least like 3 to 5 minutes, I'd say. I'll give them. So. Andrew, I assume we may need a break, so I am going to send us to a commercial break.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, Fred, on the backside of this podcast, we're going to let you kind of just steer the ship in whatever a fever dream of a podcast that you've ever wanted. So let's start where I know you want to start, the nation's capital. Where are you the GM? I mean, who's the acting GM of the Washington Wizards while they search for a real one?
See, this is why I think it's so fascinating. I constantly tell you guys the Wizards are fascinating and how they operate. No one operates like the Wizards. The Wizards fired Tommy Shepard, their president, 5 weeks ago, and they don't have an interim. Like, they do not have an interim. They have two people in their front office who they have deemed the points of contact, and that's Brett Greenberg, who's the assistant GM, and John Thompson III, the former head coach at Georgetown, who has been in the front office since 2019 and, you know, works in player development. And those are the two guys who are the points of contact. If you want to do business with the Wizards, you contact one of those two guys. Now, I know from what I've heard, John Thompson is the guy who's actually been helping with the search for the next GM. People are calling in to express interest in the job, and he's kind of helping with organizing and all that kind of stuff. Brett Greenberg is more on the basketball side of things, but I know there are places that have dealt with, you know, like agents or whatever have called John Thompson III to set up pre-draft workouts and all that. But like, there are people who I've spoken to, like agents who I've spoken to, who are like, I don't know if I want my guy to be drafted there or not. I don't know who's going to be running the thing. I don't know what the philosophy is going to be. I don't even know who is running the thing in the interim, because there isn't an interim, and they kind of just have this group thing going on, but the draft is a month away, and they've had Michael Winger has interviewed reportedly.
Yeah, Trayson this is Langdon is interviewed. To your point, that's it. This is a massive time for front offices, right? This is such an important month. The combine just happened. Obviously, the lottery, the discussions behind the scenes. Like, I know, you know, I cover the Warriors. I know their front office is having, like, you know, bi-weekly or like probably 2 to 3 meetings per week right now, discussing, like, you know, what's the path forward? You know, what does the cap situation look like? What type of guys might be targeted in free agency? You know, where might we go in the draft? You know, what other, you know, options are being formulated around the league that maybe we can step in and get somebody? If we needed to trade a contract, where can we trade a contract? Like, pretty vital front office business going down. Like, this is not August in the NBA calendar. This is not even, you know, from a front office perspective, this is not January, right? This is important times. Now, I would ask you, do you get the sense that they are really just like, hey, we're just interviewing 25 different people, and we might just randomly pop up some assistant GM somewhere as some young, cheap GM candidate? Or do you think maybe part of the reason it's taking so long is because they're like big game hunting, and like, even they're still trying to sniff to see if there's a chance about of a Bob Myers prying him away, even though from my reading, that's not likely to happen, I'll say. But like, where do you think it's going?
I don't think Bob Myers is likely. You know, there are all the rumors about Tim Connolly, who they chased in 2019, who they offered the job to in 2019 and who turned them down in 2019 before they eventually placed Tommy Shepard in. But I don't think there's any traction to them yet. There might be down the line, but yet there's not any traction with Tim Connolly. I don't have any evidence that they are big game hunting. I don't. It doesn't mean that they're not doing it. It's just that if they are, I'm not aware of it. I think we can use history to give us some context here, right? So 2019, on April 2nd, the Wizards fire their at-the-time president, Ernie Grunfeld. They don't hire his replacement until 3.5 months later. And it ended up just being the interim, Tommy Shepard. And they restructured their front office and put people in different places. But they ended up just hiring the interim after a 3.5 month search. It's not like they interviewed a gazillion people for the job over that 3.5 month search. And it's not like they interviewed the finalist candidates, you know, 12 times, and that was their philosophy. They brought in, like, Troy Weaver, for example, was a finalist who ended up eventually getting the Detroit job a year later. But Troy Weaver was a finalist. They interviewed him, I think it was 3 times. It might have been 4, but I think it was 3. And it was over a period of weeks and weeks and weeks. And there were times where they weren't even communicating with the candidates for weeks at a time. Ted Leonsis, who's the owner of that team, drags his feet on these sorts of things. And so I struggle to see how this is not one of those situations.
Well, if you don't have a GM for 5 weeks, you don't technically have to pay somebody GM money for 5 weeks. You know, they're not.
That's true.
It's just
that's true. Noted. That's true. I mean, that is true. It's just like, you know, Leonsis is also caught up with so many other things right now, too. Like, he's trying to buy the Washington Nationals, and he seems to be in a position to where he's really close to doing that. And I know that's taken a lot of his focus throughout this season, but it
is. What a time in Washington sports, by the way, with that. And obviously going on with the Commanders, there's an ownership.
Yep. Totally.
Question.
And he already owns the Capitals and the Mystics. And it's just, it is wild to me to see a team going through this time for this long without even an interim. And I get it. You know, if you ask people there, they say that it's just a collaborative thing. Those, you know, the people who are there, the high up people, you know, the VPs and up have known each other for a long time. And I do think they get along well, and I do think they work well together and all that kind of stuff. But it's, I just, if they don't have somebody in place by the draft, what happens if two different people there want to make two different picks? It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be at each other's throats, but it's just like, what's the tiebreaker? How are you actually deciding who you draft? You have 5 minutes.
Pull the string. Maybe he watched a few synergy highlights on one of these guys, and he'll make.
Yeah. And the other part of it is, a lot of GMs, like GMs, have different strengths, right? Like, one guy's strength might be in scouting. Another guy's strength might be in salary cap management. But if your strength is in, say, salary cap management, you might still end up being a great drafter, technically, as a lead exec, because you know who to trust, you know which scouts are good, you're able to identify intelligent people with intelligent thought processes, and you rely on them to help you make smart, informed decisions, and you end up making really good decisions. You might not be the greatest scout in yourself, but that ability to delegate is a real ability for a lead executive. Let's take Michael Winger, for example, who's the GM of the Clippers and who has interviewed for the job and is a candidate for, or I should say, has reportedly interviewed for the job. I haven't confirmed that. And is a candidate, though, for that job. Winger's background is in salary cap management, like I said. He's described to me as one of those people who is just, like, really smart at picking out who to trust, who to work with. Let's say the Wizards hired him. Might be a great hire, might be a bad hire. Who the heck knows? But let's say they hire him, and he comes in on June 19th, and it's 5 days or 3 days before the draft. Like, he's not going to know who to trust in that scouting department yet. He's not going to know who his guys are yet. So, like, it's going to be, it's weird timing that it's taken so long, but it's also not weird. And I don't know, but there are a lot of openings in the league right now.
Yeah, Fred, I will. I allowed you too many minutes probably on that one.
Too many minutes on the Wizards.
You got a probably 10-minute chunk there. So take us out by just however you want to take the coaching search. How many openings now in the league? Do you have it off the top of your head?
I don't have it off the top of my head.
It's a handful.
What is it?
Handful.
It's Phoenix. Yeah. It's Milwaukee. It's Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's
Detroit still open.
And it's Detroit.
So
Houston obviously got filled up by Ime Udoka. Yeah.
Intriguing.
And Toronto.
We're talking about either, like, you know, besides Detroit, but, like, you know, mid-tier playoff teams, two potential contenders, right? Giannis needs a coach. You know, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker need a coach. These are, you know, high impact hirings ahead, and, you know, maybe some musical chairs as far as Monty Williams leaves Phoenix. Maybe he fills one of the other spots. And, you know, I'm still curious about Boston. I know just the way they, well, I said the way they went out. They have not gone out yet, but I am curious about Boston. I'll just say that. What are your grander earlier thoughts right now on those situations?
I feel like we're going to get some musical chairs, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we're going to get, like, Doc replaces one of them and Monty replaces another.
Nurse replaces another.
Although, one of them or two of them might take a year off. Like, a lot of these guys also, like, a lot of the guys we're talking about are so big time. You know, Doc Rivers is so big time. Nurse is so big time. Like, these are guys who can take a year off and then come back. Like, they can do the Tibbs. They can do the Scott Brooks.
A guy I cover, Kenny Atkinson, is a pretty big name, and he's obviously not leaving a head coaching job, but I know he's up for the Milwaukee job. There's some not only big openings available, but big names that can fill them, like you said.
Yeah, and a lot of these places, not all of them, Detroit obviously is an exception here. Maybe Toronto. I don't know what direction Toronto's going to go in, but a lot of these places are places where, like, you probably want an established coach too. Like, I don't see Milwaukee hiring a first-time guy. Like, you talk about big game hunting. Like, I think Milwaukee is big game hunting. I think Milwaukee wants, like, a real established coach who has won some stuff coming in. I think that's real. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Monty Williams went there. I wouldn't be surprised if Doc Rivers went there. I do think it would be hilarious if we got a Doc Chris Paul reunion in Philadelphia. In Philadelphia. Not in Philadelphia. He's leaving Philadelphia. In Phoenix.
Chris Paul's future in Phoenix, I'm not sure about either. But, yes.
But, like, is there a coach out there who you feel like is a particularly good fit with any of these teams?
I mean, I like Monty Williams as a coach. I know, obviously, the last 13 months in Phoenix didn't go that well. But, again, I am spotlighting Boston and wondering, you know, if that does flame out, is a guy, you know, more established guy like Monty Williams can maybe take them over the top, because I still think their roster should have won the title this year. Philadelphia, like, what do they do, and what does that signal about Harden and Embiid? You know, do they just go D'Antoni because this Morey has taken full control of the ship? Or, you know, is there a belief that Nick Nurse is, like, the type of creative mind that is needed there? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm so curious about the timing on Philadelphia too, because Harden's a free agent, and there's all this noise about Houston, and if Harden leaves, now all of a sudden you're in a position where, like, you're just worse off. It's not like you can just go replace James Harden, you know? So now you're in a position where you're just worse off, and you wonder where Joel Embiid's head will be at. You wonder where the front office's head will be at, and how they're going to try to handle that decision. And whether you have James Harden or don't have James Harden may very well determine what type of coach you want, or what specifically coach you want. So I wonder in the timing on Philadelphia, like, are they going to hire a coach right away so they can try to get the best one? Are they
going to... Is James Harden going to hire the coach? Is that what you're asking?
I mean, I'm not even asking that. It's just like, whether you have Harden or not and what direction you're going in. Look, like, I know so many people are speculating on this, and I'm not predicting it to happen this summer at all. But I do think if you're Philadelphia, you do have to account for the fact, like, you have to account for the mere possibility of Harden leaves and Embiid says, I can't win here. If you can find me another place, that'd be great. And I'm not predicting that to happen, to be clear. But, like, if that's the case, you want a different coach than you would if you're trying to win the title next year, you know, probably. And a coach who might be trying to win the title next year might all of a sudden not want that job if he doesn't have Harden and Embiid. So, like, I'm really curious on the timing on Philadelphia too, because that's gonna say something.
All right, I got to get out of here to get to real life stuff. Fred Katz has to get out of here because he needs to take some calls for the Wizards. I think they have trade calls coming in, and somebody needs to take them right now. So that'll do it for this week of the Tampering Podcast. And we'll talk again next week when the finals, as Fred Katz has laid out for us, still will not have begun. We'll be right on the precipice of the finals, likely a Nuggets Heat final.